Welcome to the Above Politics Show.
Like it or not, we live in times of danger and uncertainty.
Dedicated to intelligent discussion and debate of serious political issues in the U.S. and around the globe.
Absolutely unrealistic.
Borrowing money from China to finance the war in Iraq.
From AbovePolitics.com, this is the Above Politics Show.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Above Politics Show. I'm Martin Bain.
And I'm Homer Fife. And Martin, I see here where the BNP leader, Nick Griffin, has made a complaint to the BBC saying that when he faced question time, it was a lynch mob.
Oh, and this has garnered attention not only on ATS but across the UK media. I suppose what we need to do is just take a quick step back and put some context behind this one. What makes Nick Griffin being on a BBC program called Question Time so controversial?
And Martin, I would ask this for our American listeners and people all over the world. Give us a little background on the BNP too. Some people may not know exactly what that is.
Well, the BNP, or the British National Party, is a legal political party in the United Kingdom, and I will explain that. Was sort of founded in 1982, came from the right wing of British politics, came out of a party called the National Front, and typically is seen as being very right wing. People would say that they have leanings towards the Nazi party and the racists and a racist party. So it's sort of very much on the right wing. They typically always talk about things like, you know, supporting the British people, and they use words like the indigenous British people. So he's pretty controversial because he's seen as being a leader of a racist party. And he recently got elected to the European Parliament. Him and another BNP member got elected. So a lot of people feel that this is it's just wrong, that why should people be supporting a racist party?
But now, hold on a second, Martin. Let me ask you this. Were they or were they not legitimately elected?
Absolutely, they were legitimately elected. But hang on, rather than let me talk about this one, let's see what Nick Griffin's got to say.
We know from the response on our emails, the response on radio phone-in stations and so on, that the British public, millions of extra people who tuned in last night, are aghast by the display of bias from the BBC, the venom from the political class, and the sheer unfairness. That was not a genuine question time, that was a lynch mob. And on the front page of the Times today, it's explicitly stated by the BBC that they deliberately changed the format. That cheated not so much me as all those extra viewers. We're putting in Freedom of Information Act requests and a formal complaint to the BBC over the way in which they twisted Question Time and what it should have been. And I've got three specific challenges. One is to David Dimbleby and the Question Time people. So let's have another one and do it properly, where we talk about the issues of the day. People wanted to see me and hear me talking about things such as the postal strike. One or two questions about what a wicked man I am, fair enough. But the whole programme, it was absurd. Let's do it again, but do it properly this time. Secondly, I'd like to challenge particularly Jack Straw to 1 hour, one-on-one, talking about five of the current issues of the day. His party's policies against my party's policies. It would be an enormous draw. The public would watch it by the million, and it'd be a proper democratic way of doing things. Thirdly, I want to challenge David Cameron. The mob organised outside the BBC last night, which injured a number of policemen, cost a fortune to police. He's a formal sponsor of the Unite organisation which organised that mob. I want to challenge David Cameron to disassociate himself and his party from the disgraceful scenes of mob violence seen in London last night.
Well, that was certainly fascinating.
It is, but I don't have a problem with Nick Griffin having airtime, being on Question Time, which is the flagship political discussion panel program on the BBC. So many people have got up in arms because they feel that the BNP are racists, they don't believe in multiculturalism. Guess what? I don't care. If you think that, you know, Nick Griffin and the BNP's politics are objectionable, great. But he garnered, his party garnered over 1 million votes in the European elections to send 2 BNP members to the European Parliament. Sorry, that means that the BNP is now a political force in the United Kingdom. A million votes, and the UK electoral population is round about 40, 41, 42 million. So potentially one in 40 of the electorate theoretically voted for the BNP. I've got no problem with this one. You and I have spoken about democracy in action, and we've spoken about elections around the world. You know, some have been good, some have been bad. But this is democracy in action. They have a political, call it a mandate from, you know, 1 million people to represent them in the European Parliament. So clearly, Nick Griffin being on Question Time, he's obviously got something to say, because enough people agreed with the message that the BNP were putting across to vote for them and send them to Europe.
But now, Martin, how much of this is just inflammatory? Because I'm also seeing here that the BNP has claimed that 3,000 people registered to join the BNP party during and after the broadcast. So, you know, how much of this is just some sort of a play by Nick? And you know, I'd hate to use his first name, but how much of this do you think is a play by him in order to get more support or to get the BNP more out in the mainstream?
I mean, clearly, you know, if you're a minority political party anywhere in the world and you can garner this kind of publicity, you want to keep it going. And, you know, on this show, we had Simon Darby, who is the press secretary for the BNP in the early shows. You know, very credible, very intelligent, very articulate. So, yes, of course I would expect any political party that's getting this kind of publicity to do anything possible to keep it going. And yes, many people have said the reason that Nick Griffin has complained to the BBC that, you know, it was a lynch mob atmosphere on Question Time, it's clever. It keeps the BNP name on the front of the news broadcast, on the front of news websites, on the front of newspapers. And the fact that 3,000 people have registered to potentially join the BNP says it's doing what they want it to do. They want to get members. The more members they get, the more credibility they get. So it's almost a self-fulfilling thing here. And some politicians, particularly Welsh Secretary Peter Hain, have sort of really objected to this one and say you're giving them the, you know, giving them the fuel, giving them the oxygen that's going to, you know, continue with their organisation. That's democracy. Mm-hmm. There are things that the Labour government have done that I find pretty objectionable. There are no doubt things that the next government in the United Kingdom is going to do that's objectionable. I'm sure, you know, for yourself, I'm sure there are things that President Obama's done that's objectionable. Does that mean
you think?
You think? But does that mean that you should, that people should now be saying, I don't agree with Barack Obama over the policy in Afghanistan, over healthcare, over what's he doing with the bankers, that you should then say, sorry, Barack Obama is not allowed on any TV programs. We shouldn't give him any oxygen. We shouldn't give him any press. We should just let him hang out to dry. Sorry, you can't pick and choose who you talk to in a democracy. If they legally, if they're a legal party, and 1 million people voted for them in the EU elections, sorry, I have no problem with this.
Yeah, but you know what, Martin? This is a perfect example, I think, in my opinion anyway, of the fact that how many people around the world, normal average Joe people who get up and go to work every day, truly know what freedom's all about. Because what you've got here is you have a certain percentage of your population that's trying to shut down the BNP. They're trying to stifle them. Right here in the article, they're calling it poison politics. They've called him a Nazi. Because, and we both know that in order to have freedom, you have got to have every single side represented. Every single person has to have a voice. This man has a voice. 22% of the people that they polled directly after this said that they would vote for the BNP party. 22%. And yet, you've still got a segment of your population that wants to silence him. What's that all about?
I just think this is a liberal, left-leaning media and political organisation and establishment in the UK desperately trying to sort of stop a different view coming to air. I mean, you know, if you really wanted to be conspiratorial about this, when you could say that this is all part of the New World Order trying to govern our thought processes. But I'm more inclined to think that the mainstream political parties in the United Kingdom really aren't addressing the question of immigration, which is probably one of the cornerstones of what the BNP stands for. And if I misquote them, then I'm sure someone's going to tell me this, but typically one of the things they want to do is stop the number of people being allowed into the United Kingdom to come and live here. Rightly or wrongly, whether you agree or disagree with that one, that's one of the cornerstones. And I think there are a lot of people in the sort of liberal side of this country who are, very caught up in multiculturalism. We should all live together, huggy, huggy, kissy, kissy. And part of that means bringing people in from other countries. I have to say, I have no problem with bringing people into this country if they're actually going to add value and help my country grow.
Okay. That's what I've been sitting here chomping at the bit to ask you, Martin. That's the problem, isn't it? It's not that people come into your country. Immigration is good for any country, and I don't think anyone with half a brain would argue that. The problem is when they come into your country, they want to turn it into their country. Instead of just going with your culture, instead of learning to adapt and cope to your culture, and instead of becoming a part of your culture, they want to enact their Sharia law or whatever this is and turn your country into theirs. I mean, isn't that the real problem? Isn't that what the BNP is against?
I think so. I mean, you can, start to look at this in the US that, how long is it going to be before English American, forgive me all my English viewers for saying that phrase, English American, how long is it before English is not going to be the predominant language in the States?
There's people that have actually projected that 10 to 20 years, and it's a shame. We've actually had legislation come out that has tried to make English the predominant language, but, it always gets shot down because the liberals have a huge voice here.
And that, I think, is an issue that, people say, well, if political parties, the mainstream political parties, will not address this issue, and there obviously seems to be enough people in the UK who this is a serious issue and it's something that they feel passionate about, if the mainstream political parties will not address those issues and they become important issues for people, they are going to go and find a party or an organisation that listens to the issue and says, hey, we understand your concern over X subject. This is what we propose to do. Guess what? If that's a big issue for you and you're saying, I'm going to solve the problem, what are you going to do? When it comes to vote, you're going to look down the ballot paper and say, well, hang on a minute. The big issue to me is, for example, immigration. You're going to go through and say, well, the Labour Party can't do anything. The Conservative Party won't do anything. The Liberal Party won't do anything. The Green Party won't do anything. Oh, UKIP, they're just going to get us out of Europe potentially. Oh, hang on a minute. The BNP, I saw this guy. Hang on a minute. He said something that had a resonance with me. Oh, hang on a minute. I'm going to vote for him.
And like it or not, that's what we all do. You're not going to get a whole lot of people admit that, but we are all basically single-issue or two-issue voters. There's no getting around that. If you feel strongly about immigration and you're against it, then the BNP might be the party for you. But I still think the stronger issue here, Martin, just looking at it from the outside looking in, is the fact that so many people in your country want to silence a legitimate viewpoint. Now, you might say, or other people might say, liberals predominantly, that viewpoint is hate-filled. But I've looked at some of his stuff. I've listened to him speak. I've yet to hear him say anything hate-filled. It's just his viewpoint.
It is, and you know, and you can go online. If you go to YouTube, you will be able to find videos that have been taken maybe without Nick Griffin's permission at BNP meetings and other things where, you know, his guard has maybe been down a little bit and he's been talking to what he considered to be members of the BNP. You know, and I guess we've all said things that, you know, we look back on, you know, in what we consider to be safe surroundings. You know, and then we think, oh, I wish I hadn't said that. You know, so I suspect you will be able to find a video somewhere of Nick Griffin saying something unpleasant about an ethnic minority. Guaranteed you can do that. But I don't care whether people say that, you know, they are hateful, his policies. 1 million people voted for the BNP in the European elections. I'm sorry, I come back to that one. That means that people made a conscious decision to vote BNP. They now have the political right to say, I want to have my voice heard on the BBC. The BBC is funded by licence payers who are typically taxpayers and voters in the United Kingdom. The last thing I want to do is have the BBC say, no, we're not going to have this political party on because we don't like its politics.
All right, so let's get this straight for our listeners. The BBC is much like, say, NPR is over here. It is a government-funded site then, correct?
Okay, we have to clarify that. It's not government-funded. It is funded by licence payers. It is the BBC is not government in any way. It has its own trust and its own organisation, and it is predominantly funded by a licence fee that every household has to pay to have a television set.
Okay, so it gets money from the people.
It gets money from the people. That's a very good phrase. And therefore, it has to be broad.
Oh, sure. Sure, it would be wrong of BBC to not show Nick Griffin, who arguably is representing 22% of the voters. I mean, right here, an opinion poll carried out, and I'm reading straight from the BBC website, an opinion poll carried out after Mr. Griffin's appearance suggests 22% of voters would seriously consider voting BNP in a future local, general, or European election. That says a lot, Martin.
It does, and you know, and all these people have been protesting it's wrong. I don't deny anybody's right to protest. You know, if you find someone's views objectionable, so long as you do it within the confines of the law and you do it legally and fairly and honestly and decently, I have no problem with that one. But, you know, some of the things you've seen here is, you know, people trying to storm the BBC, you know, to physically stop the BBC from giving, you know, Nick Griffin the ability to come on a show and talk. I mean, you know, I could turn around and say, and I'm going to be controversial, I could turn around and say, I don't think you should have anybody from the Labour government on any political show because they're guilty of war crimes. You could say that, you know, sorry, I can say that. But I bet you if I started doing some of the things that these people who are opposed to the BNP were doing against, say, a senior Labour Party minister turning up on Question Time, mm-hmm. I can imagine that I'd probably be in prison. I'd probably be detained and subject to some kind of order from anti-terrorism legislation very, very quickly. This is what I say, that I think, you know, the liberal elite in the UK are desperately worried by what the BNP can do to them, and theoretically they could damage the Labour Party and the Conservative Party. I mean, I've said it on the show before, I would not be surprised if the BNP get at least one MP in Westminster at the next general election.
Now, I have an observation for you. Here we have the Liberals calling the BNP Nazis, correct? And yet...
Yes.
And yet, who is it that's trying to silence the BNP? It's the Liberals. That's hypocrisy. That's hypocrisy at its finest. I mean, because I mean, what else did the Nazis do? They silenced their dissenters. And I mean, you can't have freedom and have people silencing an entire segment of your population, a very strong segment. I mean, 1 million voters. I'll tell you what, Martin. Let's listen to some more of Mr. Griffin, and this will be on Obama.
He's probably thoroughly anti-Semitic, in favour of an Islamic expansion throughout the entire Middle East and beyond. in all probability. So he's a pretty bad egg as well. But overall, he might believe in destroying our world. Clinton will do it because it pays. So there's not much difference there. I think the core difference is the psychological impact on millions of third worlders, including ones here now and coming here, that if you have a third worlder in their eyes, you know, all black, virtually all black people think in terms of black, other, someone else being black being their brother. You know, white, we don't think like that, most of our people. We think about me, we think about my family, and most we think about my country. Whereas black people around the world think about, yeah, he's black, Obama's not black, he's half black. Usually, you could say he's white, from their point of view. But no, he's got a bit of them, so they have this intense sense of ethnic identity and ethnic loyalty.
All right, Martin. Well, that was absolutely an interesting segment, especially about the BNP there. But let's talk for a minute here about the latest worldwide scare. And apparently we have now declared, Obama has now declared the United States in a national emergency over this swine flu. And, you being an outsider looking in, now I live with it over here. And I hear people, they don't want to take the vaccine because they're afraid the vaccine is going to be more dangerous. They don't want to do this. What do you think of all this huge scare?
I think it is just that, Homer. It's a huge scare. He signed a declaration giving doctors and medical facilities greater leeway in responding to the flu pandemic. Well, yeah, I haven't seen any evidence of a flu pandemic in the UK. I haven't seen evidence of it in the States. I'm sure there are people who are getting swine flu, and I'm sure it's far from pleasant. You know, I've been lucky so far. I haven't got it. But just what is he doing here? What power has he now given doctors and medical facilities that they didn't have before he declares it a national emergency? Does it mean that the government, the military, can now say, guess what? A doctor has said you must have this vaccine. If you won't take it, we're going to take you and we're going to forcibly give it to you?
Now, see, therein comes the conspiracy angle that we need to talk about for a second, because there's no denying the fact that the Obama administration is after power. I mean, that's what this is all about. I mean, they completely purchased one of the largest auto manufacturers in the world, and they are now basically sole owners of both General Motors and Chrysler Corporation. They have purchased and are sole owners of many investment banking corporations as well as banks. I mean, this all comes down to the liberal part of our government, and I'm not saying that in a negative manner, but it all comes down to the liberal part of our government trying to cement their power base before they get voted out, because I think they have a huge fear of being voted out in 2010. So how much of this scare, how much of this these national emergency things, it is coming out in order to give the liberals more power to further cement their base? Because like you, I just haven't seen it. I mean, I live over here, and I have yet to meet anyone who's had the swine flu. It's just not here, in my opinion. Now, are people dying? Yeah, but people die from the flu. Am I wrong?
No, you're right. People die from the flu, but, and people have been saying, an article, I saw on Fox News that sort of said, globally more than 5,000 people have reportedly died from swine flu. Okay, 5,000 people, that's 5,000 personal tragedies, and, we can never, make light of the fact that people's lives and their families have been devastated
right
by this one, but most, I'm going to say it and wait to be flamed for it here, Homer. I do not know of a case of someone dying from swine flu that has died just of swine flu. Almost everybody I know, or all the evidence I've seen about people dying from swine flu, have had an underlying medical condition mm-hmm. that on top of swine flu has made them very susceptible and probably hastened their death. So,
right.
People aren't dying of swine flu. They are dying of swine flu and something else. So,
well, now here's my argument. Normally, in a normal year, without swine flu, isn't it something like 30 to 35,000 people worldwide die of the flu anyway?
Yes. So, yeah, you're right. And, what's so special about, swine flu? And, and when we were talking about being conspiratorial here, yeah, it then says, well, hang on a minute. Is swine flu natural? Is swine flu something that's been developed? You know, and you can all bring it back to, oh, is this another plan by the New World Order? You know, the people that want to have a single government, single currency, single this, that, you know, they're going to try and get everybody vaccinated, and in the vaccinations are going to have little control devices so that your thing can do what you want. You can take this to the nth degree here. I mean, I have to turn around and say, personally, I would not take the swine flu virus. Couple of reasons. One, certainly in the States, almost all the companies that are making the vaccine have been indemnified against any, if for example, I take the virus, or I'm an American, I take the virus and it does something terrible to me, the government have indemnified those countries, those companies, so I can't go after them.
Well, here's one thing. I'm reading on the Fox News website. It says, the flu has infected millions of Americans and killed nearly 100 children in the U.S., which is sad. The chief of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said Friday that over 1,000 people have died as a result, with 46 states reporting widespread H1N1 activity. Where, Martin? I live over here, and I have not seen anything.
You're right. I think it is people going over the top here. Now, you know, I think it's right that government make us aware that there is this flu virus going round. You know, and the company that I work for, you know, we have had a policy document given to everybody. We have made a point of bringing in hand wash so that, you know, in many places throughout the office, we have a little bottle and we pump some hand wash, despite the fact that's antibacterial and the flu virus is a virus. Yeah, if it encourages people to be, you know, healthier and look after themselves more, there's nothing wrong with that one. But I just do not see, you know, whole swathes of the British economy, and for that matter, the US economy, and broaden it to the global economy here, shutting down because, you know, 50% of the people in a given sector in a manufacturing plant are suffering from swine flu. I just don't see it.
I still think that it's a power play. I think that the entire thing is coming out, and it's a perfect opportunity. Now, I'm not going to make that reach that like you were saying, that this has somehow been engineered. I mean, I'm not going to say it's not, but I haven't seen any evidence of that. But what I will say is it's a perfect opportunity. And look, if politicians are nothing else, they are rabid dogs awaiting opportunities, and this is a fantastic opportunity for the administration to step up, to declare a national, because under a national emergency, Martin, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, it broadens the scope of the administration's powers immensely. Under a national emergency, basically, the administration can do any number of things they can't normally do on a daily basis, such as posse comitatus can be suspended in a national emergency. Now, what that means is this administration can legally cordon troops, and I'm talking actual military troops, within the confines of the United States, which normally is against the law. In a national emergency, assets can be used that can't normally be used. In a national emergency, certain portions of the Bill of Rights can be suspended. Citizens can be taken into custody. Martial law can be declared. Now, I'm stretching this all out to the extreme, but make no mistake about it. Once a national emergency has been declared, whatever administration is in power has tremendous authority that they did not have before. And I'm talking about, think of a curfew. Let's say they put in a curfew at 8 o'clock at night. If you violate that curfew, you can be arrested. You can be taken into custody without being arrested. You can be held. The powers and the scope of a national emergency is so far-reaching that a lot of citizens that are sitting back and allowing this to happen because they're afraid of getting the swine flu, they don't have any idea of the potential that could come with this.
And you just have to question, how does this all then lead into, you know, I sort of see this as this all tying up with the sort of bill on healthcare as well, because you think, well, hang on a minute, these two do seem to be connected, you know, in the fact that, you know, he's all of a sudden trying to go to the Senate. You know, because I'm trying to think, hang on a minute, swine flu needs to be made by companies that are going to be involved in healthcare. You know, is this, you know, I'm spinning this one, and you know, we are.
I don't think you're spinning it too far, Martin. I'll be honest with you. I mean, the point you're making here is hitting home with me.
So, yeah, obviously, you know, if he goes to people and says, well, hang on a minute, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to declare a national emergency. It means that, you know, we can start maybe to force people to have the swine flu vaccine. You know, that's going to cost money to produce. I have no idea how much the swine flu vaccine costs per dose. But you've got to be thinking now, you know, there's, you know, significant numbers of people in the States who theoretically might like the virus, might like the flu vaccine, sorry, or might be told you have to have it. You know, that's money in people's pockets. You know, you can then think, hang on a minute, if Barack Obama gets his healthcare bill put through, that adds another, what, maybe 40 to 50 million Americans that will be able to afford to get the vaccine. You know, is there something in the vaccine, or is there some reason why the American government want people vaccinated?
I think it makes sense because, and now here's something too that I think that people aren't paying attention to, because sometimes it's hard to connect the dots, especially whenever you have a trusted member of the government, the president, who's coming out and he's doing scare tactics. And I'm sorry, but I'm calling it like it is. Why not connect the dots here? They're having trouble with the healthcare issue. They are having trouble getting it passed for any number of reasons, you know, not the least of which is the number of people that actually have healthcare. We don't want our healthcare to change, but that's a whole other issue. But they're having trouble getting this passed. All right. All of a sudden now comes this huge health issue. In fact, a health issue that is so prevalent and is so scary that the administration has to come out and declare a national emergency. What better way to push through a national health care bill than to scare the country into thinking that if we don't get one, we're all going to die?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's you know, you have to think there are obviously some very clever, articulate and sharp people who were obviously advising President Obama, because clearly, you know, this was a cornerstone of his candidacy, and he said he wanted to deliver this. Now he's got the resources and the capability to deliver this. So, you know, you've got to be thinking there are people saying, how can we reinforce this and make more Americans go to their, you know, senator and their congressman and say, you need to pass this bill. But looking in, one of the other interesting things is what else is going to be in that bill? Because, you know, people in the States are probably used to that, but those who live outside the States, is that if you pass a bill in the States, there is typically could be loads of other acts or things that change policy, change laws that have no relationship to the main. It's called pork.
Yeah.
So what else is Barack Obama going to have to put in? Like, take, for example, you know, I'm speculating here, and I'm just using this as an example here, so please don't, you know, shoot me down for this one. But there could be something in the healthcare bill that talks about special tax breaks for cattle farmers in Montana so that they can get the senators and the representatives from the state of Montana on board.
Right.
That probably happens. That's what you call the pork concept. It has no relationship to the bill. It is purely there so that the senators and the representatives will sign the bill. They probably don't care an iota about the healthcare bill. They're thinking, hang on a minute, I've got some tax breaks for the people that are going to vote for me in 2010. I've done my job to keep my job, and I've helped the people that are going to elect me.
Now, Martin, let's take a break from this issue just for a second, if you don't mind. I really want to talk about this pay czar here in the United States. Are you familiar with him?
I haven't seen it, but I guess this is something to do with bonuses for
exactly.
Those people that you know, who have been responsible for some of the recent economic ups and downs.
Yeah, that's putting it mildly. Here's the problem. We have. We have never had any more, and I think actually President Bush started this, appointing people is what they call a czar, C-Z-A-R. They are non-elected, answerable only to the administration. Now, first off, that's a problem. They're not answerable to the people. Why are they in power if they're not answerable to the people? But that's a whole other issue. But this Pazar, this Kenneth Feinberg, has come out, and he has said flat out that he is going to limit the amount of money these corporations that accepted bailout money can pay their executives as bonuses. Okay. On its face, that sounds like, cool. They took government money. They should not be handing out these million-dollar bonuses. However, here's the problem. And I will quote from Stephen Bainbridge. He's a law professor at UCLA. Quote, he has a lot of authority with respect to not just the seven, but with respect to all TARP firms, and that's who we're discussing. It's an enormous expansion of federal powers over corporations. That's the problem. Who is the administration of this country that can step up and tell a free corporation that falls within the mandates, pays their taxes, how is it possible that an elected official can dictate to them how much they can and cannot pay? People, if we don't wake up and realize what's happening here, we're going to lose every single right we have in this country. We have an elected official who is dictating to a private company how much they can and cannot pay. And look, if you didn't want to give them the bailout money, then don't give them the bailout money. You know, but we did, okay? Sour grapes, spilled milk, get over it. But they are a private company. If they want to pay their executives 90%, more than 90%, or they're talking about cutting 90% of it, actually. So now, it's not, well, hold on a second, Martin. It's not even extended. It's extended past the bonuses now, and they're talking about cutting the salaries of these people by 90%. When does this stop? When is the administration going to step in and say, okay, policemen can only be paid so much because they're paid by the government? I mean, when is this going to stop?
I agree. If they're a private company and they've not taken any bailout money, I'm inclined to agree that there is no way that a government body should be dictating what they get paid.
No, we're talking about companies that took bailout money, Martin, but still, it's still illegal. The United States government cannot dictate to a private corporation what they can and cannot pay their people.
See, well, I disagree. I say if you had to take money from the state to keep your business going, that changes the rules. As far as I'm concerned, if they took money from the American taxpayer to keep the business going, then I think if the US government thinks it's appropriate to say, we're going to stop you from paying out exorbitant amounts of money. I mean, the sums they're talking about, you know, for Wall Street are in the region of $70 billion. You know,
correct.
This is what, 10-12% of the bailout money? If you took money from the American government, sorry, you should not be paying any bonuses to anybody. Your first obligation should be to repay the American taxpayer. And I have to agree with that one. If you didn't take money from the U.S. government as part of the bailout, you should have no say in what happens.
All right.
But
First off, here's the problem. We're only talking about it at this point. The administration is only talking about limiting those corporations that did take bailout money. However, Martin, I understand what you're saying. And what you're saying is right on a moral foundation. Morally, a company that accepted taxpayer money should not be paying out $70 billion in bonuses. However, you can't look past, you can't deny, you can't ignore the legal ramifications of a politically elected administration dictating to a private company. We have laws in this country. We have freedoms in this country, and one of the freedoms that we have is we are a capitalist country. And that's what this is all about, is trying to destroy capitalism. Because, and again, my question stands, where does it stop? At what point does this administration say, okay, I don't have the authority to do that? They don't have the authority to do this. This is not something they can do. If they do this, it goes against every single thing that this country was founded on. Because, and like you, and Martin, I agree, morally these companies should not be paying these bonuses. But legally they can if they want to. And this administration, and what, we should never have given them the money. But I said that, I mean, if you'll remember back several shows ago, I said don't give them the money. Let the market work it out.
Exactly, and you were talking about it being, you know, the US being a capitalist economy. You're absolutely right there, Homer, that these banks should have been left to fail. You know, you have to think the average American, you know, worker, you know, someone who's, you know, maybe not earning, you know, is not going to get a slice of the $70 billion that's on here. I can see why Barack Obama is doing this one. And, you know, yes, you're right, there are legal reasons. Well, those legal obstacles could probably easily be overcome. He could put an act through, and I suspect it probably won't take too much to get through to say, guess what, if you took state money, guess what, we can do this one. So if they put an act of Congress or an act of state through to do that one, I have no problem with them. But I, you know, the moral argument is, I think, the most powerful one, because there are, you know, millions of Americans whose taxpayers' money is now being spent to bail. You know, I can see why Americans are aggrieved. Mm-hmm. $70 billion of that bailout going to be paid back in bonuses.
Well, let me present this to you, Martin. Wouldn't it be a better idea if the government just said, okay, if you've got $70 billion to pay your executives, then you need to pay this money back, so we are going to tax this money from you. Wouldn't that be, I mean, they have the legal right to do that. Wouldn't that just be better? Wouldn't it be better if the government just said, we're calling it our marker? We gave you the money. You obviously have $70 billion, so pay us our money back. But limiting people's salaries, that's the slippery slope. Well, that's where the power comes in.
I mean, I think you have to look at what do they actually mean by salary. Are they meaning the basic salary? Are they meaning the bonus salary?
See, that's unclear. They have used the term salary, and that's what scares the hell out of me. If they quit talking about that, I wouldn't be quite so fearful of this.
Yeah, and I suspect it could be, you know, we talk about scaremongering here. You know, you can bet that the people who are up in arms in this are probably going to be, you know, people who work for the banks, people who are involved with the banks. So, you know, have they just fixated on a particular word? Whereas if you changed it round and said, you know, the articles I've seen are talking about, you know, $70 billion staff payouts and bonuses. Clearly, if it's bonuses, Sorry, guys, not a chance. You should get it. You took money from the government, you don't pay bonuses. You put the money back, you hand it back to the US government, and the moment that you have paid back, and I believe with interest, so, you know, shoot me for that one, but I believe the US government should probably be saying, by the way, you took $100 million from the US government, you owe us $120. That's not fair. Sorry, we saved your jobs. I don't have a problem with that one. I think American people need to ask, is this about impacting base salaries? I suspect it's not. This is about the bonus culture that is endemic in the financial industries, not only in the US but around the world. And I suspect that's what's being aimed at, is the bonuses rather than the base salaries.
Well, you say that. However, Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner just issued a written statement saying, we gave him, he's talking about Feinberg, we gave him the difficult task of cutting excessive pay. See, that's the scary part.
Yeah, and there is a part of me that says, well, hang on a minute, why should you pay someone, you know, a base salary of, you know, $8 million?
Who are we to dictate how much these private companies pay, Martin? You can't do that.
I can't see how you can call a company private if it's had to go cap in hand begging to its government. Sorry, at the moment that happened, they were no longer private companies. If they had to take money from the US government to keep going, they are no longer private companies. There are financial companies that did not take a dime from the US government.
Correct. Ford being one of them.
Exactly. Exactly, yeah. All right, yeah, that's a motor company, but I'm also talking about financial companies. There are financial institutions on Wall Street who did not feel the need to go cap in hand to the U.S. government.
And there's also corporations that took the money in hand that have already paid it back.
And I have no problem with that one. If you've paid it back, and I believe with interest, that's just a subjective thing here, but if you paid the money back, no problems. If you have taken money from the U.S. government and you haven't paid it back, you are not a private company. You are in hock to the U.S. government. Whatever you say, you're not a private company. Rules don't apply here.
Martin, we're getting real close to time. We're going to have to end this, but I do want to make one last comment. Your last comments are 100% on target, and all I've got to say is enter the socialist government, because that's what's happened. These companies are in hock to the U.S. government. The U.S. government essentially owns them. They can dictate to them, and we are no longer a completely free government or country.
And I suspect that there are probably going to be peoples across every country that had an economic fiscal stimulus policy who would say, you know, if you're a left-leaning country, you won't worry about it. If you're middle of the road or right-leaning, they're probably going to be saying that's what's going to happen. But I would say historically, the U.S. has, during its times, particularly around and after the Depression, dabbled with socialism.
Yep. And it's failed every time. Martin, it's been fantastic talking to you. This has been a good show.
As always, there are always good shows when you and I are there, and there are always good shows when we're producing them and pushing them out via ATS.
I agree. You know, when you're talking about Above Top Secret, how could you possibly think of a better platform for politics to be able to come out here and talk about and give our opinions and to talk about some of the issues of the day that the members of AboveTopSecret.com are actually interested in?
You know, yes, you're absolutely right. You know, it's fun, it's enjoyable, and, you know, we have some very intelligent people, you know, and if we've said something stupid, you and I know very well that we're going to be called to book for it. And guess what? I don't mind that. I enjoy that. And we're going to get some people who are no doubt going to debate things with us. I enjoy that one because, you know, I think it's an important fundamental right that we enjoy, the ability to have say our views and have other people challenge them.
Well, Martin, I guess nothing to do but close the show.
I just want to say thank you very much for listening to the Above Politics show.
I'm Homer Fife.
And I'm Martin Bain, and we'll see you next time on the Above Politics Show.
You've been listening to the Above Politics Show. If you have a comment, suggestion, or an opposing view, please deliver it at AbovePolitics.com. The views expressed on the Above Politics Show do not necessarily reflect the staff and management of the Above Network LLC or any of its affiliates. Thanks for listening, and please continue to deny apathy.